Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Dalia Schweitzer. She's an adjunct professor at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. And we're talking about her new book, Going Viral: Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. Dalia, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on.
I was surprised by this book, and I'll tell you why. I thought it would be sort of a cool book about zombies. and it was a cool book about zombies, but it was really an intellectual analysis of the outbreak narrative, as you call it, in films and TV shows. And we're talking about things, everything from The X-Files to 28 Days Later to Outbreak to a film called Safe by Todd Haynes, which I've seen. And why these themes in films and TV shows are so prevalent and popular. How did you come to write this book? Are you attracted to those programs?
It's good that you mentioned Safe, even though it's really a marginal kind of character in the
book. An interesting movie, though. I don't know if a lot of people have seen it. I have, and it's a very weird movie. It's very interesting.
It's a very weird movie, and not enough people have seen it. The good news is it was recently re-released. It used to be that you could only, buy a DVD import for $40 or whatever.
Yeah,
and now you
right.
can actually get it on Amazon. I loved Faith when I watched it, and I think I grew up I was in high school in the early 90s, and I learned about sex at the same time that I learned about AIDS. There was never a point in my life when intimacy wasn't somehow connected to death. And I'm always interested in kind of looking at patterns, mm-hmm. And just seeing what are things that show up over and over and over again, and then kind of asking why that is. And then I also love studying film and television, because film and television to me is this great little kind of time capsule for what was occurring off screen at the time that movie or TV show was made. And so it's sort of like, if you want to understand American society, look at television and film. So for me, I was like, for me, intimacy has always been colored by this sort of, deadly disease. And
right.
I was interested, that was the initial kind of curiosity, was how has intimacy been colored as a result of the fact that now the two are kind of irrevocably linked? And so that was the initial question. And then it kind of spiraled from there.
And it really did spiral.
It's kind of funny, because whenever I start a project, I'm never really sure if it's going to go anywhere, because it might be, sometimes I dip my toe in the water and then I'm like, oh, there's really nothing here. Well, that's too bad. And with this, it just kind of, I started, I remember, I kept noticing that all these movies and TV shows were coming out in the 90s.
Right.
And I was like, well, that's interesting. And so I literally made a timeline of when all these things were happening. And that's when I could tell, all these things are happening in the 90s, and then of course they aren't happening in a vacuum, and so you could really trace, when Crisis in the Hot Zone was published, and when Laura Garrett had her book published, and it was sort of like all these things were sort of happening. It was like the perfect constellation, and so that was kind of when I was like, oh, there might actually be something here. And then when I kind of kept digging, and then I was interested in, how did the narrative evolve after 9/11?
Right.
And then, of course, what is the current incarnation of the narrative? And also, why are we so obsessed with these zombie stories? And I know, just driving down Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, and there would be billboard after billboard for The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, some zombie movie, some, zombie show on YouTube, but it was just like one billboard after the next. And again, it was patterns, it was like, all right, what's going on here? And then it was sort of peeling the onion.
It is fascinating that all these occurred and sort of came out together. And there are two sort of large themes that we're talking about. One is viruses and these outbreak movies, and then zombies. They're obviously related in the sense that mm-hmm. they're both outbreaks, and they're and it relates to the outbreak narrative. You talk about anxieties that people have for three boundaries that are ineffective. Let's talk about each one. The personal body and the body politic. So there's a lot of anxiety. You're talking about sexual contact and the sort of anxiety about that boundary of your body and another person's body. And so there's anxieties about that that have been brought up by AIDS. And then things like Ebola, and that's one of the other things you bring up in the book is that there was crazy reportage in the news about outbreak diseases, and people went way overboard in their anxieties about these diseases.
Yeah, and what's crazy is I was working on the book in 2014 when there was that recent Ebola outbreak, and it was like I was reading about the fear and panic in the 90s. As I was watching it play out in real time in 2014. And that was when there was the doctor in New York who was found to have Ebola.
Right.
And people in New York were like, I'm never taking the subway again. And he'd gone bowling and the bowling alley got shut down for a week. I mean, it was ludicrous. Like, that's not how you catch Ebola. And I was getting, you know, I teach at various schools and I was getting emails from those various schools reassuring me that they were on top of it and they were prepared. And it was like, what?
Well, that's that was a lot like the reportage. You are maybe too young to remember this well, but in the 80s when the AIDS epidemic, and that was an epidemic for real, but the initial reportage of it is, man, you could get it from like touching a phone. You know, there was like, they were like reporting all sorts of crazy stuff, and there was genuine panic and a political response based on that panic that came down that was really unfortunate. Because there were real disease, it's a real disease that nailed a huge number of people. So there is this paranoia about the personal body and the body politic. And there's also a anxiety about the boundaries between nations. And that's when uncomfortably it comes up with things like immigration.
Yep.
And you see the same kind of reaction to immigrants that people show in these movies. And you bring this out in the book. To outbreaks of different diseases. People treat immigrants like they're diseases.
Yep. And just before we move on, I wanted to clarify one quick difference. So during the 80s, there was this irrational panic over AIDS, but one of the reasons it was sort of okay was because it took doctors a while to figure out exactly how it was transmitted. And so for a while, people didn't know. And so then it was like, yeah, maybe you do catch it on the phone. Whereas I'm less inclined to give people the benefit of the doubt with Ebola because we know very clearly how Ebola is transmitted. And you're not going to get Ebola by being in the same bowling alley as someone with Ebola. So I think with AIDS, at least, yes, obviously there was many larger connected issues that were totally unfounded on facts. But there was at least this kind of fear, like, oh, my God, there's this disease and it's killing people and we don't know how, we don't know why, we don't know how to stop it. And with Ebola, you know, if, heaven forbid, you got Ebola tomorrow, you'd still be okay. You know, you'd go to the hospital and they'd treat you and you'd be all right. It wouldn't be like this automatic death sentence that AIDS was in the 80s. So I think that also intrigued me as to, like, why is the fear so disproportionate to the actual virus, and why is it that we feel this way? And then going on to your other question about immigrants, what I think is fascinating about that is, I mean, I think the recent kind of political climate has shown us that we have not made as much progress as we thought.
No.
It's kind of amazing because we do feel like we're so evolved, and then you read some of the current language about immigrants, and it's identical to the language you had in like 1910.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? And what is fascinating, I don't know if you spotted this, there was an article in that was talking about how, as a result of Brexit, some people in England are saying that after Brexit, England is actually going to be more vulnerable to viruses. I don't know if you saw this.
It's because they're not going to have enough contact with people to develop an immune.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Fascinating because normally the argument is the other way. Normally you would think that fear of viruses would justify Brexit because they're like, gotta close the borders, you know, keep them out. And so it was fascinating to read this sort of alternate argument that was like, wait, this might actually have the opposite effect. But yeah, most of the time, and we see this play out in the current news media cycle, you know, that immigrants are seen as bringing in disease.
So these anxieties that we have for other things that are in society are manifesting themselves, or at least echoing, in these TV shows and in these films. And the third boundary you talked about was between ordinary people and different disenfranchised groups. And you've made it a sort of a fascinating comparison about zombies and terrorists, that zombies are the obvious terrorist.
Yeah.
So unlike the disease narratives, which are sneaking around, the person doesn't have the disease, manifest the symptoms right away, and they're getting into polite society. Zombies are terrorists, but they're obvious terrorists.
Mm-hmm. And so you don't even have to think twice before killing them off. And if you do think twice, you're actually negligent.
That's right. And that's what The Walking Dead is all about.
Exactly.
It's absolutely amazing. Let's stick with zombies for a minute, because zombie movies are actually fairly old. As you give an entire history of zombie movies, White Zombie, 1932 is one of the early. I think Bill Lugosi's in that. And then there was a great film, Val Lewton's "I Walked with a Zombie," which was a fantastic film that came about a decade later. But then there weren't that many zombie movies. And then I think it was 1968. The Night of the Living Dead, which I remember totally being unprepared for. And zombies were slow then. they just basically shuffled around. Yeah, they ate you, but it was always like, how the hell could you not run away from a zombie? But then everything just piled on in the 90s. So what happened between The Night of the Living Dead in the 90s, was it all these disease narratives we're talking about?
Well, I think what's so fascinating about zombies is that they're kind of like a cipher, or a reflection of what's going on at the current time. And that's why it's so fascinating to look at these different waves of zombies and see how the zombie narrative has evolved.
They get a lot faster.
Oh, yeah. They get a lot faster, but also, the early zombie movies, you'd usually have, one or two, and they'd be controlled by this sort of, voodoo master, and they'd basically be slaves.
That's right.
And it was just sort of, playing on this fear of perpetual slavery and colonialism and all that stuff. And then when George Romero brought it back, it was very much responding to Vietnam the sort of the graphic images that were showing up in the news and just sort of the really kind of fractured state of America at that time. And so, yeah, they were still slow. And an individual zombie wouldn't really be a threat. But that's when you start getting into the idea of the horde of zombies. And I talk a little bit in my book about why the shift from the single zombie to the horde. And there are a couple different theories, World War II and the concentration camps and the Korean War, just the idea of the threat of this kind of mass of sort of soulless bodies that are coming toward you. And then again, the zombie narrative kind of died away, and then it comes back with a vengeance in the early 2000s. And that's when it's fused with infection. And because, of course, that's the current fear.
And that's 28 Days Later is a good example of that.
Exactly. 28 Days Later is one that really it's always hard to say this was the first, but 28 Days Later was the first very kind of successful one that had really sort of widespread impact. And that really kind of integrated the idea of infection with zombies. You also had the Resident Evil video game, which came out before the movie.
Right.
So this is also what's kind of fascinating, is it's never going to be we're going to give Danny Boyle credit for, creating this new incarnation. No, Danny Boyle is responding to the same things that the creators of Resident Evil were responding to. And it's and the creators of Outbreak were responding to. And it's that's how life works, that's how society and media work. So then starting in 2000 is when you get the zombies that are infected. And then that's when the narrative really changes, and you have everything is faster. You become the transformation into becoming a zombie is faster. Once you're a zombie, you move faster because everything's been fed up. You don't even necessarily die first.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what's so funny. Like, you know, you look at even TV shows like Santa Clarita Diet, and it's like that zombie would be completely unrecognizable if you compared it with I Walked with a Zombie.
Oh,
I mean, the zombies have become more human. I mean, it's fascinating.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Dolly Schweitzer, an adjunct professor at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. We're talking about her book. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in this book. Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. What I'm fascinated by the whole I Am Legend. That movie has been around for a long time with different titles. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting. It started out as a novel, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then became, what was the first movie made? It was The Last Man on Earth, 1954.
Yes.
And then
I'm terrible with years, but yeah, The Last Man on Earth.
And then The Omega Man with Charlton Heston. The Omega Man had Charlton Heston. And then finally with
Will Smith.
Yeah, and I Am Legend, which. That idea of the single person trying to sort of find the answer seems to be a common trope in these movies, you know, that.
Yep.
And what was I never knew, and I learned in your book, is that there was an alternative ending for I Am Legend.
Yeah, I don't even remember how I initially found that out, but that to me is fascinating. And when I teach the class, we look at the two different endings because the ending changes everything. You know, you have, I don't know.
It sounded like if I had seen that movie, it was a completely different film.
Yeah. And I vastly prefer the original ending because I feel like that it's such a more kind of complex and profound statement. I don't know if I should give away the
ending. You should, because anybody's going to see the alternative ending. So talk about what that was.
Okay. The alternative ending, interestingly, you can find if you buy the DVD for
okay.
it. And there are some kind of low-res versions online if you prefer not to buy it. So you can, it's not like impossible to find. It's just not the easiest necessarily. But basically, the ending that everyone associates with the movie, because that's the ending that was shown in theaters, you have Will Smith as, you know, this human who blows up himself in order to kind of save the last vestiges of humanity or whatever. You know, like
That's right.
Blows himself up and he protects these two people who are left, who are then able to escape to go to this like one gated community that still exists, and they're able to bring, you know, the cure with them. And it's like, oh, Will Smith, you're such a martyr. and then what's fascinating is in the original ending, you get this, and this goes back to my point that I made about how zombies have become more and more human.
That's right.
You know, and the line is more blurred between, like, you know, how much humanity is actually left within this body. And so at the end of the original one, there's the implication that Will Smith, and I can call it's not Will Smith, it's Richard Neville, but he has sort of conducted all these experiments on zombies in order to find the cure, thinking that they are sort of subhuman. And then at the end, he realizes that he actually was wrong, and that the zombies feel and think and, you know, have emotions and all that. And so he's kind of this sort of evil doctor.
That's right. Yeah.
Thought that he was better than them, but now we're not so sure. And so it leaves you with this sort of lingering question over, like, well, who was the hero in that movie? And, like, do we applaud Richard Neville, or was he actually sort of, you know, tormenting these poor creatures?
Was that ever released as a test thing? Was that ever released and then the audience didn't like it?
There were definitely tests. Screenings, and that's why they redid it. I'm not sure how extensive the test screenings were, like if it was just, you know, like one or like a handful, that I'm not sure. But I know that that was the original ending, and then it like didn't test well because, of course, you know, it makes Neville look less of a hero.
people hate nuance and complexities.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Well, that's life.
I know.
One of the you were talking about how zombies reflect humanity, and as you write about in the book, in the movie Shaun of the Dead, which I happen to really love.
Me too.
In the opening, low wage workers like he is are basically zombies. I mean, they're not actually the zombies yet, but the whole point of the beginning of the movie is they're acting exactly like the zombies will act later in the movie. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the big comic things is he doesn't realize that everything's happened because everybody's still behaving the same way.
Yes, and I show that clip in class, and it is, I think it's brilliant.
It is brilliant. It is pretty funny. But that's we were talking about barriers. That's where it gets frightening, actually, too, because the difference between the way we are and the way a zombie is, it's just a little flip of the switch, and we're already sort of acting the part of the zombie already.
Right, and that's what I think is so fascinating about this latest incarnation is that sort of ambiguity, you know, and when, like in The Walking Dead, when someone starts turning into a zombie, or you know that, you know, they've been bitten so that they're going to imminently turn, and it's kind of like, well, when do we kill them? You know, like what's the point at which their humanity is so far gone that we're not killing a human? Whereas in the earlier zombie movies, there was no ambiguity. I mean, it was really obvious, like, oh, this person is a zombie. Like, of course they're not human. And now it's like, I'm not sure. And, you know, of course, the kind of a fusion of sort of the evils of capitalism with the low-wage worker kind of like being the zombie. Like, that's not this brand new concept. But to see it visually played out in Shaun of the Dead, I think is brilliant.
And another thing you bring up, guns become more and more prevalent in number and size and type.
Yep.
As the zombie narrative goes on. And it's especially true in movies like, I Am Legend has a lot of guns in it, but the TV show, The Walking Dead, there's a lot of violence.
There's a lot of violence. And what always fascinates and horrifies me is all the websites that tell you exactly what kind of gun so-and-so was using and where you can buy it.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
I mean, it's not like, you know, I mean, I don't think you see that kind of thing when you have, like, you know, like an action movie. Like, I don't think you go to the, you know, a website to see, like, oh, well, you know, what gun did Vin Diesel have? But with The Walking Dead, it's very much like, here's the breakdown. Here's the gun that Carol used, and here's where you can go buy it.
Well, and that's another thing that you bring up. There's sort of an emotional connection between survivalists, that whole group of people who believe that at some point society's going to break down and they're going to need to arm themselves to the teeth, and these people in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like, that's the zombie plague is just standing in for what they consider to be the breakdown of society.
Exactly. And I actually show my students some screenshots from some of those survivalist websites because they always they have like a store, you know, where you can buy the gear that's going to, like, you know, get you through the next nuclear apocalypse.
Okay.
And so it's the blurring between fact and fiction is just mind blowing.
Oh, Jesus. Well, Zombieland. I happen to love that movie too because it's got a great bit by Bill Murray in there.
Yes.
So. For people who aren't familiar with picking all different weapons to off the zombie, that becomes like a competition of who can more interestingly off a zombie in that film. And there's again, there's a huge number of zombies and they're quick, they're fast.
Mm-hmm. And they make reference to that, like they say, like, you know, if you can't run fast enough, you're going to die.
That's right. That's exactly right. One of the things you also bring up is that it's only when society collapses that we personally become human again.
Yeah. Well, that's one perspective that's sort of romanticizing, you know, I mean, that's sort of, I think of that as like the Walking Dead fan base, you know, and this idea that, like, once we are liberated from the white noise of the 21st century, from, you know, Facebook and Instagram and your mortgage and your credit card and your cable bill and, like, all this kind of mindless, you know, obligation, debt, stuff that's like swirling around you that's making you, you know, less of a manly man. And it's like, well, when you get out in the woods and you've got your gun and the only thing that matters is can you make it through another day, then it's sort of like this redemption, you know, this like liberation. And then you also have the other narrative where it's like, oh, but look how quickly we become monsters ourselves. And then, you know, the humans are more of a threat than the actual zombies because at the drop of the flip of a switch, you know, all this humanity that we've been cultivating for the last however many years just evaporates and we become monsters or animals or whatever you want to call it.
There's an interesting sort of two-page spread in your book, which is the film cycle analysis of these films. Mm-hmm. Is that applicable to any trend in films?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially the distinction between cycles and genres. So genres, which people I think are more used to hearing, tend to kind of stay the same. You know, like a romantic comedy from the 1950s, without a ton of work, you could remake it now. I mean, you'd add, right, you know, cell phones and whatever. Like, you'd have to, you know, you'd update those things. But the core of the story, the boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl, that's basically the same. And you can just swap in Jennifer Aniston for Katharine Hepburn, and it's like, you got the movie. But what's fascinating about cycles is that they are kind of, because they have a much shorter shelf life. They have a shelf life of sort of 5 to 10 years. And then they have to get updated because they're much closely linked to sort of current events. So after 5 to 10 years, they feel really dated. And that's one of the things that I bring up with the short-lived CW show Containment, which I think probably would have been successful in the mid-90s.
Right.
But it's like by 2018, that narrative is old. You know, that's not going to fly. We need the zombies. We need something new, something different. We need the strain. It's like, you know, you have to add some kind of new subtext in order to keep it fresh. So the cycle becomes really interesting to look at because you have these changes, and then it's really easy to trace where those changes originated to, you know, real life, historical, cultural, social shifts.
We're completely out of time.
And
we barely talked about the book. My guest tonight has been Dahlia Schweitzer, an adjunct professor at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. And we've been talking about her book, Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. We just talked on a few things. There's a lot more in this book. Dahlia, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.